The Back Page, brought to you by Mirror Sport and backed by Ladbrokes.
It's sweltering, lads, but we're back. I'm Shane Stapleton. With me this week, I've Shane Mahon from Ladbrokes. How are you, Shane?
Shane, how are things?
Flying it. Rob Hines from the Mirror.
All good, Shane, all good.
Good. And Bernard Flynn from the Mirror, how are you doing?
Good.
Bernard, we're going to start with you because you had an incredible treble last week at 13-2. What did you tip up?
Oh, what seldom is wonderful. But we try to give the listeners a little bit of value. I actually had the Galway at Kilkenny, I think it was minus three actually. Clare minus two, which I thought was the bet of the weekend, probably. Yeah. And then Donegal, half-time, full-time, which I couldn't see it any other way as well. So it's a treble, but see if we can give them a few more this week. We'll give it a lash,
definitely. We've plenty coming up on the show. We're going to look at the internationals this weekend and the soccer or football, depending on what way you like it served. We're going to obviously look at the World Cup as well, because that's coming up very shortly. The hurling and the football, a bit of tennis because we're in French Open territory, and we're going to look at the Derby and Oaks as well at Epsom. Right, lads, let's start with the friendlies in the football, because the World Cup is coming down the tracks very fast. And I was actually just watching the History Channel is more or less turning into a World Cup station at the moment. And I was looking back at the story of England at Italia 90 last night. And that was my first World Cup as a young lad, 7 years of age, watching it. And I was enthralled by it. I really was. What's your favourite World Cup memory, and what's the first World Cup you remember? Bernard, I'll start with you because you're going way back to England in 66.
Mine was Pele. Honestly, yeah. Just as a young guy.
What year? What World Cup?
When he was 17, it was what year was
that? Was 1958.
But I just remember. I still, as a young lad, I do remember growing up even and watching the documentary that I watched there a while back. And him was just absolutely incredible. His career, everything about him, he sticks in my mind. Okay, the 66 England team. I wouldn't be dancing and. Total joy of watching that, but
800 years of oppression.
I have to say, Italian 90, you'd have to say, from an Irish perspective, was absolutely, in fairness, the joy, the scenes, and it got soccer completely, I think, infiltrated our country. And then GA came along, and we actually, the four games at Dublin Meath in 91 probably changed a little bit, but Italian 90 probably, but Pele for me, Maradona's goal, all of those iconic moments, most of the games in the World Cup that I can recall up until the semi-final or final are so boring, particularly the group stages are dreadful. I hope that changes, but I don't see it changing.
Rob, come on. We don't want that cold
World
bucket
Cup
of water.
World Cup 2002.
Yeah?
It's the only time I've been here where the Ireland have been in a tournament. So, I mean, Saipan aside, look, it was great, and God knows when we'll be at World Cup again.
Yeah, so Roy Keane, no doubt. So
you're
bringing negativity again with the Roy Keane thing.
Oh, I'm the same as Rob. I remember being in school, and I think we were in fifth class at the time, and they're all out. The old massive TVs into the main sports hall. There was four of them and one in each corner, and we were all brought out in that day, and everybody was given the rest of the day off. And teachers, on tables and chairs celebrating that Robbie Keane equaliser against Germany. It was unforgettable.
We had a homecoming in Drogheda to welcome home Gary Kelly and Ian Harris. I don't think we'd be welcoming any footballers from Drogheda back from a World Cup anytime soon.
Yeah, and Stan as well, no?
Yeah, well, he's Steve. A Dundalk man. But I think we let him into Drogheda for the day.
Yeah, I was working in a, I was in college, and I was working in a pub in Killorglin in Kerry for the summer as well. So I actually missed a load of that World Cup. But World Cup 1990 for me was glorious. Even that icon, that Chow sort of mascot, the blocky red, white, and green. Absolutely loved all that World Cup. Had the sticker book. The sticker books were unbelievable as well.
Yeah, the poor
still
Irish.
Are.
The poor
yeah, still are. Still.
Yeah. Yeah.
The poor Irish housewives in 1990. Yeah. Oh my God.
Oh, the country was on wheels.
It was unbelievable.
Then,
Those were the days of those fly traps you used to have hanging down from the ceiling. They were like those big sticky spiral sort of traps. Anyway, that's what I think of with those days. Great days. So that's World Cup memories. Who are the favourites, Shane?
The favourites for this year's World Cup, Shane, are joint favourites currently Brazil and Germany, both at 9-2 at Ladbrokes. We got 6-1 then about Spain, 6-1 France, 9-1 Argentina. I think they could be potentially overpriced. 10-1 about Belgium, England, 14-1 is 25's bar. For the World Cup.
Some interesting prices there. Mm-hmm. I like Belgium. Can you trust them?
No.
Losing to Wales in the quarterfinal of the Euros.
Yeah, Belgium and Argentina are the two sort of teams that you always think have a good chance and just never really seem to deliver. Whereas you're better off, I think, sticking with the old reliable Germans that always seem to be there or thereabouts.
Yeah, and Spain as well.
And Spain as well, of course,
they're incredible. Actually, speaking of all things Spanish, Real Madrid just won the 3 in a row, and their French manager Zidane is after getting the bullet. Who's in line to replace him, lads?
Yeah, well, at the betting currently, Shane, it's just been revised in the last half hour or so. Mauricio Pochettino recently signed a new contract extension with Spurs. Don't forget, he's 3-1 favourite as we speak. 4-1 Arsene Wenger, 6-1 Antonio Conte, 6-1 Guti. Real Madrid legend himself,
former
of course.
Former number 14 left footer, yes.
Absolutely, yeah. And then 10-1 Luis Enrique.
Right.
Hardly see that happening at
well,
Barcelona.
He is a former Real Madrid player as well.
So yeah.
He did the switch over. Yeah. Pochettino, well, Spurs has been a feeder club for Real Madrid anyway, with Modric and Bale in the past, so it could happen
again. Potentially for managers too.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be something? I mean, wouldn't it be just a fit for Wenger? I mean, he'd just love it. Mm. Incredible. Mm. But Pochettino, there would be some compensation deal there, I imagine.
Yeah.
Like, it would be ideal for Arsene Wenger, wouldn't it? Just the unlimited, vast amount of cash that he can spend, which
but
you
how
probably
do you build
that
three in a row?
Oh, you can't. You just can't do it. We were saying off air, like, I mean, what more can Zidane do?
Yeah. I'd say he's pinching himself to actually.
I think, you know, didn't he mention in a press conference, was it last season after they won their semi-final of the Champions League? And he mentioned about the fact that, you know, I'm being realistic here. I know what Madrid fans want and need. You know, I could be gone next week. And he was just after winning a semi-final to get them into a European final. And he was speaking as if I could be gone soon. I mean, where else would you hear it? Only at the likes of Real Madrid and Barcelona and these places.
And it's Bayern Munich. Your pancreas got the boot after winning the treble a few years back. So we started off with World Cup, and we want to tee up the World Cup, but two teams that will have played no part whatsoever in the summer jamboree are Ireland and USA. That's on this Saturday at 8 o'clock. Lads, we saw the game in Paris. 2-0 loss. Colin Doyle doing a Karius impression. Albeit in a far less
not quite, but close.
Yeah, not quite. But, like, are we hopeful for the future based on what we've seen there?
I don't think so.
I think, yeah. You mean, you always have to be hopeful, but I just think, you know, there's no one there. I mean, you look at Coleman's probably the only really, really good player we have, whereas, like, Duffy's Premier League quality. But, I mean, after that, you're really
sweating. And he's our goal threat now.
Yeah, and
that's
he's a centre.
A sad situation when we're looking at Shane Duffy for a goal to win us a match.
I mean, it probably is unfortunate that Sean Maguire, you know, is injured for these friendlies, because the sort of games you like to see him playing and getting a good run in the team. Yeah.
He'd be starved of the ball. He'd be isolated up front. They'd be.
Do you see O'Neill's comments? I mean, I know some of you soccer heads would actually probably be more au fait than me, but O'Neill's comments there in the last few days was that the championship has no preparation for international football.
I thought it was fair enough. I mean, it's
Where is he going to get the players from?
He's not going to be getting them from the Premier League.
I mean, that's what I agree with you, Jim. Yeah. Where is he going to get the players?
Yeah,
the depth and the talent isn't there compared. Like, we talked about Italia 90 and, you know, USA 94. There were Premier League players back then as well. Let's not forget. Now, ultimately, you'll go back and say, well, you know, Jack Charlton and these lads should have got better out of the strength and depth that he had in the squad. But I mean, ultimately, they did very well with the players that they had. But I mean, what we have at the minute just is not good enough, and that was shown against Denmark when we were hammered.
I mean, everyone was crying out, well, not everyone, but a lot of people were crying out for Robbie Keane. When's he ever going to retire from international football? And now we need a Robbie Keane.
Yeah,
just
he was
missing.
Our only goal threat for many a year.
And I think we just sort of we really missed.
But the problem is, even against average teams, your Moldovas and, you know, the equivalent, we're still not even holding on to the ball. So as much as I agree with Martin O'Neill, you know, I mean,
yeah, there's a good, very good stat. I think it's about 25 years ago in the, well, Premiership or the Division 1 as it was, Irish players scored 70 goals in that season.
Yeah.
11 this season gone by.
Mm. And not too many from Shane Long, who's our...
I think it's a goal, problem. I know it wasn't there a statistic there last season about young people and kids taking up sport from a young age, and apparently, you know, soccer was right down at the very end of it. I mean, you've got rugby now, which is massive in this country, obviously, in recent years. I know you're shaking your head there, but it is.
I know.
And Gaelic Games is still very
strong. GAA runs the show.
This Ireland USA game is effectively, it's a testimonial to John
O'Shea. Yeah, it's a testimonial essentially for John O'Shea. Fantastic.
He's been brought back into the squad. I think the big thing here is Graham Bourke is not available for Shamrock Rovers tomorrow night.
It's a shame.
And they're playing like the league leaders, Dundalk, and he's basically not allowed to play for them to play in a testimonial. Whereas a few weeks ago, they're playing a testimonial. The next day at Celtic Park, and he was allowed to play in Sligo. Travel to Glasgow the next day, and now he can't play in Dublin tomorrow and play another game in Dublin the next
really
night.
Doesn't really make sense.
It doesn't make sense. It's very unfair in Shamrock Rovers. I know the manager's come out and he said, look, you're never going to deny a player to play for his country, but at the same time, he should be allowed to play for Rovers tomorrow as well.
There's an interesting sideshow in this game. There's a player who made his debut for USA the other day and scored in the 3-0 win over Bolivia. Timothy Weah, son of George Weah, who is currently the president. Elected. He's the president of Liberia. Played for City and Chelsea as well. He was unbelievable at one point. Wasn't he European Player of the Year in around 95?
Yeah, could have been. I think the young lad's only 18 as well, isn't he?
A winner of the Ballon d'Or? Did he win it? I think he did.
I'm not 100%, but I remember he was kind of being lined. There was talk of him going to Blackburn back when they were champions, and I was a massive Blackburn Rovers fan at the time. And I always remember the pun on the back of the star, on his way, and I was absolutely buzzing. And the only player that Blackburn signed that summer in 95, when they were champions, was Georgios Donis, the Greek winger, who flopped, and Blackburn went tits up from then on.
Wow. Really haven't been head up since. Yeah.
Just double checking here, he did win the Ballon d'Or, yeah?
Yeah, he was incredible.
Is there, but it friendly internationals, I mean, international soccer by and large is dreadfully hard to watch, but a friendly is ultra dreadfully hard.
You're not
to
looking
watch.
Forward to the World Cup by the sounds of it.
That'll pass the early stages just about, but friendlies are a complete joke. Yeah. I think they're a joke.
Especially
a joke.
This time of year. You can understand it if you're in the World Cup and you're trying to, you know, I mean,
it doesn't matter what happens. It doesn't matter what happens.
At the end of a season, like, I mean, Irish players don't want to be here. Like, they want to be on a beach away.
Let's look at some value anyway. So I don't think this is going to be the most high octane game in the world. So a draw and under 2.5 goals is 12-5.
Yeah, I'm looking at that bet as well. It looks very realistic.
No goal score is 13-2. Do you have a nibble on that? And Shane Duffy, as we mentioned earlier, possibly our greatest scoring threat now. First goal, 25-1.
I'll double that out to 50-1 as well. Our double odds match here once again. 15 minutes is what you're looking for, albeit odds on probably that we won't get a goal inside the first 15 minutes, but if we do, we're going to double those winning odds anyway. So
if anyone hasn't got a better tip than that, I'm going to move on to our next game.
I was just going
to
mention Ireland are very short in the match betting. They're 11-10, USA 12-5, the draws 2-1, but I concur, the draw.
Didn't we beat USA 4-1 here on a friendly not that long ago? Was it maybe two or three years ago we played in Lviv, I think, around November?
You know, we actually beat them 4-1 in 1990 at the old Lansdowne Road. It was the first Ireland game I ever went to with the father, and I remember having the oversized
last.
With him, yeah.
That was before you moved on to rugby.
Yeah, it was. So I had the massive oversized hat, and I remember getting a hot dog outside Lansdowne Road, and like even months later, the remnants of the ketchup were still all over the Ireland scarf I had. And he wanted to leave with about 10 minutes to go, saying, come on, we'll beat the traffic. And I said, no. And I think we still scored another two goals after he had said that. Mm-hmm. So I was delighted. I forced him.
That's good. Those days, you don't get them back going with your dad to a game.
That was great. Great memory.
Good as it gets.
Yeah. So another game is England-Nigeria. That's Saturday at 5:15. What's the betting there, Shane?
2-5 about England, Shane, currently in the match. Betting 29-10 about the draw. 7-1 about Nigeria. 5:15 kickoff.
And just kind of looking at their groups for the World Cup, England are in Group G and they've Belgium, Panama, Tunisia. Tasty game with Belgium, but the other two teams, they should really knock off easily. Nigeria have Argentina, Croatia and Iceland, who knocked England out of the Euros. So that is a very tasty group.
It's a bit of a gamble. A lot of people are talking about a gamble by Gareth Southgate, you know, leaving so many high profile experienced players behind on the plane, or not on the plane, so to speak, for the World Cup in Russia. The likes of Joe Hart, albeit he's had a pretty dismal season. No Chris Smalling and players like that. So it's a fairly inexperienced team he's going to be bringing over. And they're currently 14-1 at the moment. Probably just about right, I'd say.
Yeah. Just price. 11 of the Euro 2016 squad are there. Only five of the current squad played.
Well, he is sticking to his guns, excuse the pun that's been in the news an awful lot there recently. he is, you know, sticking to his morals, I suppose, for want of a better word. But, you know, about, you know, using young players and, you know, experience doesn't matter too much. As long as they're, you know, he's always said if they're good enough to play, age doesn't count.
Yeah, I'd love to see Raheem Sterling light up this World Cup. And he's first goal scorer at 4-1 here, which, you know, I think it'd be a nice answer back to the criticism he's got. And is there any other odds that you'd be looking at?
Harry Kane 12-5. Obviously, we don't know the teams at this stage. Could change drastically, these odds now, by kickoff. 3-1, Jamie Vardy. Marcus Rashford, speaking to a couple of people this week, fancy him as top goal scorer for the World Cup. Funnily enough, I'm not sure if he's going to get many games, but he's 130 for first goal here.
I can see where people are coming from. I think Harry Kane's a great chance because, I mean, if you take Belgium out of the equation, he could score an absolute barrel load against the other two teams in that group, and then they could go on to get knocked out by Poland or Colombia when they get the hopes up winning the World Cup.
Just wonder though,
I'd
love to see England go far because I really think they can, but I
can't see Gareth Southgate.
It's kicked off
World Cup
in England, I think, already. I was listening there the last week or so, and they want to stick some of the players are getting, and they're following their every move and every off the field antics and etc. Even Sterling, I think they're coming down heavy on him. But they tend to lose that run in themselves when the World Cup comes around, doesn't it? So there is a lot of pressure on the players.
And even this year, I think the hype hasn't been as bad as in recent years. But if they go out and get through, you know, fine well, come the knockout stages, they will think
Iceland,
their name's on the
trophy.
Yeah. I thought it was an interesting point just looking at Nigeria that they have a player, Will Troost Ekong, and he was talking about the possibility of racism in Russia because, as we know, it's a country with a checkered history with that regard. And he goes, we have a great team spirit, so if one player said they didn't want to play, you know, because of racism, everyone would stick with that. So I think that's going to be an interesting one to watch.
And the Croatians have had their fair share of problems with racism over the years as well. And of course, they have to play them. So
indeed,
might need me from the Russian
kickoff point. So, do we think England will win this? I mean, lads, realistically, with a friendly, it's very hard to call. But Raheem Sterling, if he plays 4-1, for me.
The draw 29-10 could be potentially value. I mean, many England internationals just finished 0-0 in recent times. Yeah. They don't pay too much attention to them. So.
I think 2-5 is very short, isn't it? You wouldn't be filling your boots now with that.
Okay, that's the football. We'll go in heavy on the World Cup next week. I'm actually really starting to look forward to it now after watching that One Night in Turin documentary of England and their journey through World Cup 90.
Yeah, it actually, you know what it is? Some of the matches will be really, you know, be good, great to watch them, and it'd be colourful and all that end of it. And if it's the only thing, if there's not a game during the week, I think it's going to be great entertainment.
Yeah, yeah.
That's it.
How do we get any work done? How do we get this podcast done?
Yeah, we will.
You'll have to call
Orton. We'll struggle on through. Come on, we'll get it done.
Yeah. I'll phone in. Right, so there's a huge amount of GAA this weekend. 7 big matches. I'm going to start with the hurling. The Leinster Senior Hurling Championship, round 4, Wexford against Galway. It's only an 11th ever championship meeting between these sides and the fourth in 40 years. Wexford have won 6 with 3 wins for Galway and 1 draw. What are Ladbrokes expecting here, Shane?
Yeah, Wexford currently 5-2, the draw 10-1. Galway fairly short at the moment, 2-5. The handicap set at 3 points. Wexford +3, 11-10. Galway -3 at 5-6.
Galway absolutely bullied Kilkenny last week. And they won by 8 points, but that was like a 75th minute goal from Wally Walsh. Even brought it back to 8.
First score in the second half.
And they just managed 3 overall. They're struggling, I think, but Galway just looks so impressive, Bernard.
Is there anyone near, genuinely? Yeah. I think since the end of the league, the gap has got quite wide. We've seen a fair bit of what teams are about. Kilkenny obviously aren't up to it. Your own county, Tipperary, whether the good draw, but Cork, I just think they're actually quite a bit. I love the attitude, the mindset, the groundedness. The manager has to get great credit here, because Galway's teams in the past, and I remember even of old, to get them focused the following year was the hardest job. But I think they're mean. There's great competition for places. Their defence is, people don't realise, I think these guys are really mean. They play in the edge. There's a bit of nastiness, which is good. And midfield and a forward, Joe Canning last week, back to his very best. Concannon coming in, another addition. But see what was offloaded off the bench.
Yeah, three monsters. Jason Flynn, Glynn.
They literally sickened 3 or 4 to Kildare. Or Kilkenny players with belts when they came on. It was just incredible.
Yeah.
And there doesn't seem to be as much pressure on Joe's shoulders nowadays than there used to be, say, a couple of years ago.
Well, you know every
the hype around them.
Because all of their forwards are so dangerous and so colossal, they all have to be marked tightly by their man. And the centre back, let's say, for example, with Kilkenny, it was Killian Buckley. He has to be able to protect his full back line as well as try and mark Joe Canning. Centre forward is the one position on the field where you can kind of float. We actually played a league match last night, and I was centre back. You know, a lot of lads were away, hence why I was centre back. But you kind of end up sweeping an awful lot, and you need to be able to communicate with the lads in front of you and hope that they don't have to mark, the midfielders don't have to mark their man too tightly, and they can kind of half pick up your guy too. So if you're a clever guy, and Joe Canning certainly is, you can find pockets of space all over the field. And that was probably his best performance that I've seen in a couple of years. I know he won Hurler of the Year last year. I don't quite think that was, he had a good year. I don't quite think it was the right call, but he actually looks like this year he could retain it, but it's early days.
Like I mentioned about, you know, relying heavily on him, saying years gone by when he was scoring, 2-6, 2-10 per match, say.
At full forward.
Like, so it just goes to show, as you mentioned, the other players he has around him these days counts for an awful lot.
Yeah, so Galway are a bit of a mean machine. I just wonder what Wexford can do to try and win this game. They've got some excellent players. Like Rory O'Connor, I think, is the best young player in the country. Lee Chin, we know what he can do. Conor McDonald, if you get good ball into him. Now, they need a bit more support around him. I just struggled to see, like, if you look back at the Leinster final last year, Wexford started well, but after about 32 or 3 minutes, they were praying for half time just to get a bit of a breather. And the second half, they were kept at arm's length at best by Galway.
I actually, last week here on the show, I actually didn't think this sort of performance was in them. I stopped off in Tullamore, met a good few friends of mine who are awfully hurling people, and was talking to a good few of the Wexford supporters that were still there in a pub. And the way back, I just took a little break on the way home for the Cork Cork Tip football match. And
you're, just to clarify, you're talking about Wexford hammering Offaly last Saturday night.
Absolutely, but the Offaly people and hurling fraternity, so Joe Dooley, Michael Dygan, different people like that there, Brian Gavin, the hurling referee, they actually were blown away when they seen Wexford up close. I know Offaly were dreadful. I expected a big performance. It didn't happen. Mm. I was very disappointed. But to see the performance that Wexford gave, they thought they went to a new level. I know it was only against Offaly, but they seen a reinvigorated and a new bit of an attitude about them. They thought they were brilliant on the night. I mean, superb stick work, physically, fitness wise. Now that it shocked me a little bit how poor Offaly were. But that's the only thing.
Yeah. I worry for Wexford in this game. Now, they haven't lost at home under Davy Fitz, and that's not to be sniffed at, but can they get Sean Murphy into the game? If you're playing a spare man at the back as a sweeper, he needs to be getting on the ball 15, 20 times in a game. And I think he's going to be... I think he's... Like, he struggled to get into the game in the Leinster final last year. I do think he's an excellent player, brilliant for that role. But I think Wexford are very clever in how they manipulate other teams, and... Like Sean Murphy, even against Kilkenny, only had in the league had the ball only 9 times of the whole game. So I just worry, and I just wonder where Wexford can get changed.
Looking at a bet here, you know, hoping that they go out hammering tongs in the first half for an early lead, perhaps Wexford, for them to be leading at halftime, just forget about the full time result. Now they're 2-1 to be in front at halftime.
Mm. And they beat Galway in the league. Yeah. And one of the big keys to that was Jack O'Connor and Aidan Nolan, and Lee Chin from the puck out. So, you know, there are green shoots for Wexford. I'm not dismissing them. And I actually think because of the sweeper at, you know, on Wexford's side, and that means that there's going to be a spare man, which will possibly be Aidan Hart at the other side of the field for Galway. No goal here is 14-1. And we know Galway won the All-Ireland without scoring a goal in their last 4 games last year, because they were up against sweepers. So it might be similar again. 14-1.
Huge crowd. They're going to be the atmosphere. Kilkenny and Galway was brilliant. See, packed over in Galway. See,
I was there. Yeah.
Like that. But I think this place will be jammed. It'll be rocking. But the first, I got a treble last week. The first one this week, I think, is a cert. Galway -3 has to be
5-6. Start
5-6. Yeah, and it's near enough. So I'm going to go for that. Brilliant. Absolutely.
Yeah, I'd go along with that as well.
Just to say, it's one of 4 double odds matches this weekend as well. Hopefully plenty of goals and double odds. We're going to stretch it out to 20 minutes on the GA front this weekend.
I think it would really shake up that championship if Wexford managed to win that.
If they could do it.
Yeah. Cork against Limerick is also on Saturday at 7 o'clock down in Páirc Uí Chaoimh. 65th championship meeting between them. Cork lead 45-14 with 4 draws. So Cork really are a bogey team for Limerick. So I was shocked when I saw that stat. And Limerick don't have a goal in their last 4 championship games against Cork. Bernard, what do you think?
Yeah, just looking at last weekend, I mean, I like Cork. I like what they're about. It seems to be great. They're buzzing, their movement, they're pacey. Question mark, maybe the full back line a little bit. But overall, I think Cork will win it. I actually think Cork will win this one.
Yet they're 4-6 for the win, 10-1 the draw, and Limerick 6-4, just 2 points on the handicap. Then Cork -2, 11-10, Limerick +2, 5-6. Going to ask you, did you think that match against Tip might have taken a bit out of Limerick?
No, well, I think that will have given them massive belief because they took Tip to extra time in the league, lost it, but you know, narrowly. And I think that game was against Tip was proof that we're up at that level now. No, Tip were all over the shop, so maybe it's not really reflective of reality and they're not at Galway's level just yet. But definitely, I think they've had the week to decompress after it as well, get back and go again. And I wouldn't be shocked to see Limerick win this at all, because I think they've got good balance to their side. We saw flaky Cork were in the second half last week, so you'd wonder where their confidence is going to be.
Should have closed it out. They didn't, actually. It was poor.
Yeah, I mean, if
9 points up.
If Limerick can beat Tipperary and Shane Dowling isn't even being brought on, you know that's a serious team. Peter Casey might come in, his Napiershik clubmate. He's a brilliant player. I wonder, will Mike Casey, Peter's brother, come in at fullback? Seamus Hickey really struggled, and I think that's an area that they could improve on. So 4-6 are saying for Cork?
4-6 Cork, and 2 points in the handicap. So
Limerick +2.
Tight enough.
Limerick +2 is what?
5-6. Yeah.
cash it in there now, lads.
One for multiple, perhaps, at the weekend.
Yeah. So the other game in Munster this weekend is on Sunday. Waterford, injury-ravaged Waterford, against Tipperary, who had that second half blitz of Cork. I mean, actually, watching Tipperary in that second half, it reminded you, wait, these guys are absolutely brilliant hurlers. And he's slowly mutating towards the best starting 15. So I'd have, like, Brendan Maher went back wing back, made sense. And he's a great reader of the game. He plays there, plays centre back for Burris Lee all the time. Always impresses. Paddy Maher in the half back line. Ronan Maher went to midfield. That's the one thing I don't agree with, because people said, oh, he played there in the league and he was great. His best performance in the league was in the second half in extra time against Limerick in the league semi-final, when he had moved back again to wing back. And he had the ball in his hand twice in the second half the other day at midfield. So anyone who says he helped change the game midfield, absolutely incorrect. And you need to be disabused of that silly notion straight away. So if that was the half-back line, Paddy, Ronan and Brendan, in whatever order you want, that's Tipperary moving closer to their best team. Get Barrett in cornerback. Seamus Kennedy's done all right at fullback. And with Waterford being so down on numbers this weekend, Tadhg DeBourcy is out for sure.
Had a list of the players in the Sunday game last weekend that are missing for Waterford. It's
yeah, half the All-Ireland team could be gone. We'll see if Ozzie Gleeson comes back. Yeah. Park Mahoney doesn't seem to be a massive show. What are the odds here? It's got to be on back of the tip.
They're 1-8 and the match betting. 16's about the draw. Waterford 6-1. The handicap is set at 8 points.
8 points? Like, I don't know, a tip or so.
I don't know if they'll win by more than eight. That seems a bit of a stretch now.
Yeah, I don't know. What do you think, Bernard?
I'm just wondering, I was listening to Dan Shanahan and Derek McGrath, and as you said yourself, Shane, there, are they resigning us all and themselves that they're going to be the team to be knocked out?
Yeah.
It's nearly inevitable.
No home games either.
You know, I just look at Liam Kearns, and I went down to cover the match. One thing with the modern player today and squads and groups, you've got to be positive. And I think that hurt the footballers at Tipperary. The negativity with the 6-day turnaround was a good bit made it after the first few days of the week. And they were dreadful last weekend. I'm just wondering, are Waterford buying into the players themselves?
Self-fulfilling prophecy?
A little bit. I think there's a little bit. I'm surprised at that under Derek McGrath. I really am. Because that hasn't been their style. But I just think there's too much made. All it is, it's not talking about the guys that are there who could be better. If each of those guys give 5 or 10% extra, I know you're missing so many players. They won't win the game, I don't think. But I just think they need to actually change tack a little bit and go for that. You know, they've got to be more positive about where they're going.
They'll still have 15 players on the field and they're all little counted players. But they have lost.
There's no value in the betting, I don't think.
No.
You know, and like, they've lost their last 7 championship meetings with tips since 2008 All-Ireland semi-final under Davy Fitz. Yeah, and just one other stat for you, Shane. They've lost their last 4 championship games to tip when they've had strong teams by an average of 13.5 points. So maybe all of a sudden that handicap is looking okay.
I'm just looking at the winning margin brackets here as well. I mean, you've got Tip to win by 4-6 is 4-1, 100-30, 7-9, Tip between 10 and 12, 4-1 as well. So could be potentially back a few of those there, and you've got plenty of winning margins to go at. If you're assuming that Tip will win easily.
You think they will, yeah?
I think they'll win easily. I don't think they'll cover the spread though.
Yeah.
I think we might give them a little bit better value. I'd stay away from that one.
Would you? Yeah?
I think I would a little bit.
Right. Well, we're all reckoning on a tip win.
Tip to win.
Yeah. So the other game is back in Leinster again. Dublin Offaly, which is a de facto relegation.
That's
playoff.
A huge game.
Yeah.
Massive game.
Yeah. They last met in 2011 when Dublin won a Leinster quarter final. But I feel sorry for Offaly here, because third week in a row going out to get against Wexford, got absolutely annihilated. And Davy Fitz even suggested how tough that is going out. And he's going out against Galway this weekend, third weekend in a row. So we'll see what the knock-on effect is for teams having to play so many games in a short space of time. But 3 red cards for Offaly as well last week. Two of them are straight reds, so they're out. Conal Keeney's probably back for Dublin as well. They've had a weekend break. It's hard to look at anything but a handy Dublin win here.
1-8, 16-1 about the draw. Offaly 6-1. The handicap again at 8 points here as well. Even money, Dublin minus 8.
I don't think I touched the handicap. I mean, I could be wrong there. But I was speaking to David Tracy. We had a club function there last weekend, and he said the mood in the Dublin camp is really good. And I was delighted to hear that, because it's year one under Pat Gilroy. People could have very quickly started saying, you know, football man trying his hand at hurling, all this kind of stuff. they had a really poor league. They were missing players, but now they
went close against Kilkenny.
Should have beaten Kilkenny. Were close against Wexford.
Should have beaten Wexford. Definitely closed it out. They really should.
Yeah, a lot of people said that on the balance of play. Now I wasn't down at it. The balance of play was Wexford were in control for most of it, but they could have won. They could be 2-2.
I reckon the Offaly players are probably on their knees. I was saying I was there in Tullamore last Saturday night, and there isn't huge optimism. And I think you'll see a fresh, as you said, Shane, Dublin getting the break for the week. I think they're out on their legs nearly. It's taken a lot out of them. And Dublin, I think, definitely will win this. And is it a good thing, Offaly going, being demoted for, you know, Leinster hurling? So a lot of people are saying no, but you got to think of it. Other weaker teams come up out of Westmeath, whoever it may be.
Yeah.
It's a big prize not to be up there. It's huge.
I think they should bring Leinster up to six teams without doubt, and then have a week break in the middle for absolutely everyone. So everyone has the same schedule and workload at that point. And then you get a Joe McDonagh team up and down every year after that. I think that would work well. One stat I'm going to throw at you about Dublin. They've scored 5 goals and conceded just 1 in their 2 Leinster games as well. So Sean Moran will probably play a sweeper again. I think they'll struggle to get a goal awfully, that is. So it augurs well for Dublin for the future. I mean, this is possibly, you know, a missed opportunity this year, but it is early doors under Pat Gilroy.
Yeah.
So that's the hurling, lads. Let's move on to the football. And
hold on, are you ready for this? Will I roll it out?
Roll it out.
Here we go. Give me a second here.
Yeah. So
listen to this, folks. This is worth listening to.
So this is the commentary of Carlo beating Kildare last week.
All I'm going to say is Carlo Rising.
Yeah, it's Shane's County, and he's very good at press and play on his laptop. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're an absolute shambles. This is not Carlo Rising. I absolutely love Brendan Hennessy.
Brilliant. What a day.
That was Brendan Hennessy, I remember when he was doing the commentary on Mount Leinster beating Owlert in the Leinster final, and he was going, I told everybody.
It just gives it incredible passion. Being from Carlow as well, it was just fantastic to see. I wasn't at the match now myself, Sally, but I will be at the Laois match, I can guarantee you that much. And just seeing a few of the lads back home in the pubs and clubs around the town and down the country, and you know, you've men in their 50s and 60s who would have went through barren patches in Carlow football for decades, you know, really celebrating this unique occasion, and it was just fantastic to see.
And it's mad, you lose your best player to America for the summer, Brendan Murphy, and you now have a chance to play a fellow Division 4 finalist in Laois to make and win that, and you're in your first Leinster final since 1944 when World War II was still going strong. Yeah. Isn't that mental?
That is in 1944. That's it. And you know what? They won't care. It's Dublin they're going to be playing. They will not give a damn. Yeah. But I just think, if you look, and the one game they didn't do themselves justice was the league final against
Laois.
It was. Yeah. And that should be their main aim. But the stat, I can't remember, Shane, and you're a good GA man with stats and stuff.
A good hurling man.
Yeah, you are a GA
No,
man.
I love football.
You too. Do it too. Not, just think about this. Not one solitary wide did they kick in the game against Kildare. Mm. I've never heard of that in a senior championship match. I don't think I have. And that was quite extraordinary. 2-1 from the defence at Leisure. Saint Mourne, was it he called him? The Horse Mourne?
The Horse Lawler. Conor Lawler.
Horse Lawler.
Yeah.
Kieran Mourne.
Kieran Mourne.
He got a great point, the wing back. A brilliant point. Mm. But Mourne's goal was very, very good. It was brilliant for them. Absolutely superb overall. What I'd say is that it's not taken away any. Carlo shouldn't be beating this Kildare team, with all due respect. Mm. They did. It's brilliant. I've said it. And the atmosphere in the camp, you can see it. They're a united bunch. They never blink, Shane. When Brendan Murphy was announced going to America, you know what, Turlough? Nobody opened their mouth. Yeah. They were so positive. One of the players last week, he was quoted in the Independent, "We want to shock the world," and they did it Sunday.
Darragh Foley said it.
It was brilliant. But Kildare, I mean, I just seen the highlights, and they were shocking. I think
Keane O'Neill, the Kildare manager, did a bit of a Jose Mourinho on it. You know, Mourinho would go to the manager before full time and shake hands. He went to Turlough and shook his hand before the full time whistle. I suppose in a way to kind of give himself and the lads a chance to celebrate.
You're a bit smarmy about that now. So. You're a little bit smarmy there now, Shane. I don't like seeing it. I like Keane O'Neill, a nice guy. Don't like seeing that smarmy. Bernard, I have to take issue with you. I have to take right issue with you in your column in the Mirror, and somebody sent me this and they want me to tackle you over it.
Okay.
What a magical weekend for Leinster's Lesser Lights. Longford beat Meath for the first time in 36 years and reached the provincial semi-final in for the first time in 30 years. Carlow were superb in seeing off Kildare for the first time since 63, and when you throw in the fact that Laois dismantled Westmeath, who were a division above them this year, the argument for a second tier competition got torn to shreds. Wrong. It needs to be tiered straight away. If Meath aren't able to beat Longford, they're clearly not good enough to be in a competition challenging against the likes of Dublin and Kerry and Mayo.
So how many do you have at a tiered competition with four, six teams and the rest down in division in the second?
No. I'd go top 16, bottom 16. Two groups of eight and you get through to quarterfinals.
He's going on a league basis.
Well, I certainly wouldn't retain the provinces because they're shocking to watch.
Okay, well then you wouldn't have what happened. That commentary, we wouldn't have it. No, we wouldn't have it. You wouldn't have what happened down in Longford. And I was there and it wasn't easy as a Meath man. You wouldn't have that either. Okay, how would you grade them, you tell me, after last weekend?
I'd base it on league positions. And over a couple of years...
Meath, they'd be still up there.
Yeah, they'd be up there and they'd be quickly booted down. And that'd be the way it is. I mean, surely it's a meritocracy out there. And you'd have far more better, closer games if teams of equal levels were playing each other all the time. What's the point in watching Dublin beating teams by 30 points?
Correct, but what the problem with the provincial championship has been, when Wicklow would play Carlow in the first round, no, don't get me wrong, it generated, the crowds were dreadful. Laois at home got 1,000 people in the last couple of first rounds in O'Moore Park. That's the only issue I'd have. Yes, something has to be done. And Shane, you know what, you have a very, very good point. My only issue was, when you seen the Longford players and the crowd and supporters last Sunday evening, it was incredible to see the joy. Look at Carlow this week. Even Laois, who are Division 4 team, beating Westmead, a Division 3 team. I don't have all the answers, but I'll tell you what, after last week, I don't know who's the good ones and who's the bad ones in Leinster anymore.
Well, let's look at, like, when it hits Super A territory, and there will be a dead rubber or two.
That's all everyone's waiting for. The GAA are just banking.
To get rid of the rubbish teams and play teams of equal standing.
Well, I did call Tipperary rubbish last hour, and I have to say I got a bit of stick for it. But that was the biggest single disappointment for me in the footballing weekend. Leave out Ireland to go down and watch Tipperary, and I thought they actually might beat Cork at home. Mm. They were awful. Their attitude, they looked unfit, disinterested, they had no shape, no method, no structure. I just could not, it's a long way back. I couldn't believe it.
Mm. Yeah, no, but like, I obviously I'm going over the line saying rubbish teams, but we want to see the best teams playing and teams of equal standing playing against each other.
Well, the GAA have actually thrown all their eggs in one basket with the GAA this year, with the football. I think it's top heavy.
They're mutating towards tier championship, I think.
Super 8 is what they're tearing towards.
Yeah. I think it will eventually.
Yeah, but look at the Hurling Championship. Now you've got two, like there's obviously, like Offaly aren't exactly going to win Leinster, but like the Munster Hurling Championship round robin, that's been great so far. So has Leinster for the most part. And it's far more engaging than it's been in previous years. Every weekend we've had four unbelievable games in Hurling, or 3 to 4. And if you had that in football with equal teams of equal standing playing each other, it'd be brilliant.
And you can't argue when I watch the hurling and see Galway Kilkenny, you look at what's going to happen down in Wexford this weekend with Galway coming to town. Yeah, it's true. But at the end of the day, the one real issue I would have would be, and it's my own county as well, I went to see the Miners again the other night against Louth. They were brilliant last week against Dublin. At the moment, Kildare and Meath and counties like that, the real issue for them is they should not be as poor as they are. They should be better. And that's the challenge there. But I think we're going to, within 3 years, we would be seeing what you said, Shane. Absolutely.
Possibly. Galway Sligo in the Connacht semi-final. What are the odds here?
Long odds on about Galway here, Shane. 16-1 on the draw at 18s. Sligo 9-1 against Galway, -8 on the handicap this one.
Sligo have lost just one of their last four championship meetings with Galway, though, so... Do you give them any chance, Bernard?
To win, no. But the handicap, they could be inside that handicap. Yeah. I think Galway are, the closer this comes, and Galway will beat Sligo, the closer the Connacht final comes, the more I give Roscommon a chance against Galway. I do.
Yeah, why?
I think he's a brilliant team spirit. I think he's managed the situation superbly. You got to remember, I think he's probably up there, what he's done, the way he's turned it around. The bench he has now, he has the meeting of his hand. They don't fear Galway. And he's digging his heels in to have the Connacht final in the Hyde. If it's in the Hyde, with 18,500 people for health and safety reasons, there should be no reason why it shouldn't be.
But it's been taken out of his hands.
It shouldn't be. What? They played Galway in Galway in the last two Connacht finals. Mm. It's crazy. They have a serious chance coming into this. Okay, no disrespect to Sligo. The handicap, is there a lot of value there? Depends on Galway. Are Galway going to change and be as negative if they're still playing? They won't put up a big score, Galway, the way they're playing. They won't.
Kerry against Clare. It's hard not to back Kerry here, and with a little something to spare, you imagine.
Exact same odds, Shane. 16-1 on about Kerry here. The draw at 18-1 and Clare 9-1. Again, the handicap at 8 at
Kerry,
evens.
Kerry used 37 players during the league. The likes of Sean O'Shea and David Clifford are the ones you'd be focusing on for this weekend. Have you seen anything from Kerry to suggest they can improve from last year?
It's very simple for me. James O'Donohue, by the way, is meant to be absolutely flying for the first time in a couple of years, really flying in training.
So, gone into writing blogs, I think, by all accounts there recently.
This Morris won't like that. But this all depends on what defence of structures and what work they've put in defensively. Surgery needed beyond comprehension. For Kerry to go forward and have any chance, if their defence play the way it has done for the last 12, 18 months, they will be obliterated in Croke Park once again. But by all accounts, I think they've worked hard on that. I think, looking at it now, Mayo going in the back door, will they get through? Outside of Mayo, if they do get a good run, or Monaghan, Kerry are the only team we're hoping that might push Kerry, or Dublin, push Dublin to have any sort of a bit of a competition at the back end of the Super 8s.
You talk about Kerry, though, and like they've tried out players like Jason Foley, Ronan Shanahan, Gavin White is another option in the back line. What's more important, their backline structure and system, or is it lads who can just learn to swim in the deep end?
A bit of both. I mean, you can't. I think everyone fit from midfield up, Kerry will pose serious problems to absolutely anybody, particular Dublin. They really look at the league final. Mm. I mean, they're capable of putting up big scores. It's defensively they've been torn to shreds in 10 or 15 minutes against the likes of Dublin. Unless they do something in Kerry, they want to win in All Ireland. But I'll tell you what, I did like. Mm. I liked a lot about Cork last Saturday night. I've seen a big difference in Cork. They're ready in the Munster final. This is by no way, easy street for Kerry. Cork are going to be ready. Defensive structure they've put in place is brilliant. They're fit. They're strong. Aidan Walsh and Maguire at midfield, superb. Luke Connolly. And their management seemingly have their boys eaten out of their hand. And there's a close-knit bunch with a grounded manager who has a clear focus about what way they want to play. And I liked what I seen last weekend, so.
Ronan McCarthy looking to stop the 6 in a row for Kerry there.
Here's one for you, Kerry against Clare this weekend. Dream start it is on our website. Kerry to get the first 3 scores of the game, 9-4.
Not bad. What about Fermanagh Monaghan in the Ulster semi-final? It's a double odds match, isn't it?
Monaghan and Fermanagh, it is indeed. So you're looking ahead to the first 20 minutes in terms of the goal scorer markets. And that one, Monaghan, odds on here 1-5. The draw is at 10-1. Fermanagh is at 5-1. On the handicap then, it's set at 5. Monaghan minus 5 is at 5-6.
Fermanagh beat Armagh for the first time since 2004. Where are Armagh going under Kieran McGeaney, first of all?
They're heading for Mullingar the next Saturday. that's where they're heading under Kieran McGeaney. But it's amazing, like a guy who absolutely gives everything. You just wonder his thought process and mindset. I think the players aren't really buying into what he wants and what he did as a player and what he's about. A lot of players not playing. They should be far better. I seen them in the league this year. I thought they were awesome against Westmead. Can't understand. 7 points they scored. They were shocking, brutal, awful against Fermanagh. They scored 7 points against them in the league. I do expect a big reaction. Westmead are drowned their sorrows a little bit. The confidence is low, missing a number of players. I think Armagh will win that one. But come back to Fermanagh.
Yeah.
Gallagher now has a really good system of play to suit Fermanagh. He has the boys eating out of his hand. He really has. A good atmosphere. And Ricey McMenamin is loved in there. He's doing a great job, I believe. So they'll set themselves up to really frustrate Monaghan. Do you know what? The handicap, I think Monaghan minus 5 is a good bet.
Do you think so?
Yeah.
Owen Donnelly, Ryan Jones is a good midfield. You've
very
the Quigleys good up front as well.
They can't run too fast, but I mean, they're very accurate.
If you took Conor McManus out of that Monaghan team, do they go from... I don't think they're all Ireland contenders anyway, but do they go from non-Ulster contenders if you take him out of the team?
Well, they better be wary of Donegal. It'll be Donegal, Monaghan, and Donegal have every chance to turn a Monaghan over at the moment. Donegal have better forwards than Monaghan right now. And to answer that, that's the big question still. Up front, McCarron is coming. He's coming a bit more and improving. But outside of Conor McManus, as regards scores in big games, I mean, they don't have forwards good enough to win Ireland.
Two and three defenders on him nowadays as well, isn't there?
The big one is, can they break the Croke Park hood of quarterfinal? That's what the semi-final is, their goal this year and their aim.
Okay, well, that's the Gaelic football, and we're looking forward to both codes of GAA this weekend. The French Open is on. Shane, where are we at with the odds at the moment? The thing that really caught my eye, actually, was Serena Williams. I don't know what is it. It's kind of like a cat suit, but it's like this black suit she was wearing. Kind of like, you know, when the swimmers started wearing those, what were they called? Those body type suits.
Bit like Rachel's
rig with today. With a pink belt around her as well there, yeah.
Huh? So, yeah. Like, that was very eye-catching. But apparently, like, she said it made her feel like a superhero. And also, she said she gave birth to a child earlier in the year. And
she's
so
a massive
an issue with blood clots. So
massive price, 14-1 still, and she's already through, of course, in the next round. 4-1 the field currently in the women's side. Alina Svitolina is 4-1, joint favourite along with Simona Halep, also 4-1. Gabriela Muguruza 7-1, 9-1 Petra Kvitova, and Maria Sharapova in there at 11-1 as well. And then we got 14s bar.
Is there a lack of star names in the tennis this year?
I think there has been on the women's side, definitely.
I'd say in the men's as well.
And actually, the men's, yeah, you've got, you know, Federer
and Murray are both out. So
Murray's still injured. Federer has decided in recent seasons to just bypass the clay part of the season, which is, you know, he's thinking about it. He's smart here because he knows Wimbledon is the ultimate aim for him season on season, I think.
And just Nadal in the men's side, he's won it 10 times, 2-5, isn't he?
Yeah, 2-5, very short. He looks a shoe in for his 11th.
Djokovic,
I
don't think tennis means the same as it used to.
No, he's fallen.
I listened to his interview the other day and it was actually very strange.
He's changed his coach a couple of occasions as well in the last number of years.
Does he still have that love guru coach? Yeah. You know that. I mean, you'll have to look that up now. Yeah. I can't remember the details.
I know he has changed coach several times. I think was it Andre Agassi? He's had Boris Becker as well. He got rid of him. So, yeah, interesting to see on the men's side. It'll be interesting when Andy Murray comes back, if he does come back.
I was actually looking this up earlier on. The last time Djokovic played Nadal in France, I think it was about 3 years ago. He actually won by 3 straight sets. But obviously,
Nadal was. Did he pick up an injury or something that match? Yeah, yeah, I think he was struggling.
But I mean, on clay, 2-5, couldn't be backing against Nadal. But Djokovic at 10-1, maybe each way.
Yeah, perhaps they'll be on the opposite side of the draw as well. So,
yeah, I think
it's a third of the odds maybe to get to the finals.
The Djokovic thing actually was more like
half the odds. Actually, yeah, half the odds. Yeah.
His guru advocates long hugs. That's more what it's like. And Djokovic was quoted as saying, I don't know where you heard that he's a guru, first of all. He's been in tennis all his life. I'm just glad he came back this week to get my brother to work with me. I'm not going into details because there is no sense. I know certain media is trying to find a story here and calling him a guru. I'm not going to give any more room for speculation, and he's part of the coaching team and all that. So there you go. At least I clarified that by a non-clarification from Djokovic. Right, let's move on to the race. And I know you've been waiting in the wings there, Rob. Talk to us about what races
waiting patiently.
Yeah.
Look, I suppose the Derby and the Oaks this weekend, and of course Aidan O'Brien has a very strong hand in both. I would have fancied Magical in the Oaks, but she doesn't run. I think she suffered a setback in training on Tuesday. He's 5 of the 9 entries. Magic Wand won well at Chester, and Chester somehow Aidan O'Brien does like to bring his horses before Epsom. He thinks it's sort of similar noise and all that sort of thing, and it gets them used to it. I would like her here, but I also like Perfect Clarity. It's 2-2. I think it's fairly unexposed and it could run a big race.
I was looking at Eshtia actually for David Simcock and Jamie Spencer in the Epsom Oaks this weekend. I mean, you know, definitely one of the improvers up on the rise. He's only had 2 starts. He's one of 2 runners in here without a rating, which is quite unusual going into a classic, you know, herself and Flattering with the two fillies in here without a rating. But raced on, I think, the wrong side in the Musidora at York. Was, you know, the best of the finishing group on the far side at York. And it's a tricky enough race course as well. I know several jockeys don't like riding at York, but I think she has the right man on board with Jamie Spencer. Typical hold up jockey, you know. I mean, he often leaves it late.
The $1 million question.
Hopefully,
will it be too late?
Hopefully she gets the trip as well. I mean, stepping up a furlong and a half in trip, she's 18-1 in one of the more open renewals we've seen at the Oaks in recent years. We all remember qualified turning over Legatissimo 50-1 a few years back. So we are prone to a few upsets in the Oaks.
I was just going to mention that Aidan O'Brien, 2 of his last couple of winners, I think it was 2015 was qualifying, 2012 was 20-1 and 50-1. So he might win it as fourth choice, but he could win with a bigger price.
And then we have the Derby, the biggest classic of the year at Epsom on the Saturday. And it's all about Saxon Warrior, really, isn't it? I mean, if he gets the trip.
I think he's going to be very, very hard to beat. I think he's probably the nap of the weekend. I think 10 to 11 is an absolute super price. Look, for Coolmore, the Derby is the race of the season. It's the race they want to win for the breeding purposes. But I mean, 10 to 11, look, if you're not inclined to go to back an odds on shot, I think Hazapur could run a big race with Dermot Weld, who won a trial at Leopardstown the last time. Frankie Dettori is on board. The Frankie factor, you'd imagine we'll see maybe him come in price.
Yeah, into 9-1 now.
And I think he's on board because Pat Smullen remains injured. But we must say it was great to see Pat Smullen back at the Curragh last weekend. Brilliant scenes. And in great spirits by all accounts.
And still, you know, fairly well up in his racing. I mean, he was talking about Dermot Weld's horses that day and, you know, horses that he sat on in the previous season when they were 2-year-olds and really looking forward to seeing them on the track as well. So he's well clued in, you know.
Well clued in. I think he sort of said Dermot Weld sort of kept him in the loop and has been everything else. So yeah, it was great to see him.
Yeah. Fantastic stuff, yeah.
Okay, lads, let's move to bets of the week. Bernard, you've got a treble for us, don't you?
Yeah, and I'm trying to focus in the middle of the sauna of a studio that we're in now with gorgeous weather. My thinking is a little bit distorted.
You're under pressure now after last week's winning tip, 13-2 on that treble.
It's not great value. I'll tell you the three I'm giving this week and see can I do a double treble.
As he undoes another button in his shirt because of the heat.
But I haven't got the body you have, Shane. It's Galway -3 for me. That's the handicap, and that's one of the bets of the weekend. Cork against Limerick. Cork -2. I'm going against Shane here a little bit. Cork -2. That's the second one. And I go from Monaghan -5. I just think up in Healy Park, they played very well against Tyrone there. Be familiar with it. Bigger pitch as well. Monaghan -5. That's my treble. See, can it come in again? Go for it.
Rob?
I'm going to be a bit of a coward here and I'm going to go with Saxon Warrior odds on. But look, maybe go double him up. Maybe put him
that
in.
That is so Bernard, windy.
Maybe put him into Bernard's treble and make it an accumulator. He was on fire last week. He might land it again this week.
Get out of the studio for that. I'll give you a decent price. As I said earlier, Wexford Galway, because there's going to be a spare defender at either end. 14-1 for no goal, Wexford Galway.
And just a couple for me. I'm going to go with Eshtia, I think is way overpriced in the Epsom Oaks, currently 18-1. And I fancy Wexford to be in front at half time in the hurling at the weekend, 2-1.
I look forward to you being wrong on that one.
We'll see. We'll see.
We will see. We will see. And we'll be driving the boot into each other next week, depending on who's right there. Right, lads, we've it all said from myself, Shane, Bernard Flynn, thanks very much.
Shane, thank you.
Rob, Heinz. Thank you very much, and Shane from Ladbrokes as well. We'll talk to you next week.
The Back Page, brought to you by Mirror Sport and backed by Ladbrokes.